Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name of the podcast and the fact that this is the 15th episode. I think I've actually decided upon a new intro and that's it. You know, you should know that I'm Adam Fitch by the fact that you're here. If you don't know that, then what the I'm going to try not to swear today, actually. We're going to see how that goes. But what the hell are you doing
All right.
If you don't know that? So today I'm joined by a special guest. I say that every week now, but they're only on here if they are special guests, if they know what the fuck they're if they know what the fuck they're talking about. I'm just going to have to go for it now. You know, I've been really conscious about everything I say and everything I do, and I'm trying to just control it a bit more, you know. But then sometimes I realise that you can't control absolutely everything. There's no fun in that. Discipline's cool, but like sometimes flying off the charts a bit. Fuck it. That's how I am anyway.
Sometimes you just gotta let it rip, man.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, if I can't do it, then who can, you know? So yeah, I'm joined by the coach himself, Taylor Johnson, Chief Performance Engineer at Statespace. Hopefully I've got all of that right.
Yep.
There we go. I'm always shit with titles. There's too many fancy titles flying about now. I think I saw the other day Chief Experience Officer, which is like CXO, and I was like, I've never seen that in my life. A CXO, I have never seen that. But the cat of CEO, I always get fucked up with them. So like to check it. How's it going, man? Are you good?
It's going well, man. It's going great. Can't complain. How are you?
Not bad. Very tired, to be completely honest with you, which is, even I'm sleeping very fucking well. These days, I'm on my performance tip. I'm sleeping well, so I can perform well throughout the week. It's by the end of the day, I am knackered. I am ready for that sleep. So it gets to like 10 p.m. and I'm like, right, I'm meditating. I'm off to sleep. That's it. I'm not touching my phone. Like, you know, it's just I'm trying my best. Kind of inspired from conversations we've had, actually, trying my best, even though I'm not an athlete by any means or even competing. Just, you know, to do what I can to look after myself. A lot of our jobs involve just sitting at a desk all day, you know? So really trying to sort that out. But yeah, bit busy, but yeah, it's good.
Good, man. Yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, kind of catchy right there is, you know, you don't have to necessarily be an athlete to be a high performer, right? I've always said that, you know, for a lot of people, everybody competes every day.
Yeah,
in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't matter if you are a CEO, a professional gamer, a professional athlete, a soccer mom, a stay-at-home dad, a doctor, a lawyer. Everybody has to step up and compete every single day. And that's a choice every day. You know, how you want to go about your business and what your stand and how you want to navigate the world.
Yeah.
And so being able to, you know, and we've had these conversations about health and wellness, and it's been awesome to see you transform that. And I'm so glad to hear that you're sleeping better and you're on the right track there.
Yeah, I've lost about a stone in like 33, 34 days, I think, now. So
give me the conversion for that. So a stone is what in kilos?
It's 6.2, roughly. Maybe 6.2, 6.3 kilos.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, so it's just like, if I'm going to take a call, I'll bang my AirPods in and go for a walk. You know, I don't have to sit at my desk and just go on Twitter mindlessly browsing, you know? So, yeah, it's and you are right. Like, we all go through negotiations every day and we're all competing every day. And yeah, once you start to understand that, it's like, right, how can I do better? And exactly, yep. It's like everything I'm doing physically really helps me mentally. And obviously, you know, there's a link there. We all know that. But it's like, I never realized the severity or just how kind of ingrained the two are. And yeah, it's just that as more time goes on, I'm just like, right, I need to, for me, I don't want to work 18 hours a day anymore. I want to work 10 to 12 hours, but do better work within those. Cause I know it's possible by like hour 13, I'm fucking knackered, but I'm still going. I'm not producing the best that I could, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you said a couple things in there that I think are key. You know, it's optimizing your day so that you could be the most impactful in the work that you're doing. So a lot of times people tend to draw out their focus over a long period of time. And there is a point of diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. So it's really getting in tune with yourself and knowing that you cannot disconnect the body and the mind. And people try to do it, but it's impossible. Right. So being very in tune with, you know, your mental clarity and how much your physical well-being plays into that and your psychological well-being.
Without a doubt. So what we'll do is we'll shift into it, or else I could just have this chat all day. I love discussing this stuff recently. But something I've been doing in the podcast quite recently is asking people to describe kind of what they do and how they label themselves. Because obviously, as these job titles and such, but like content creators, such like a sprawling kind of label for somebody. It don't make sense as to what necessarily they're doing. And it's just interesting to hear how people define what they are and what they do, or what they do and how that defines them. So do you go about calling yourself a chief performance engineer every day, or do you see yourself something different, you know?
You know, it's funny. I had this conversation internally. You know, it's funny, especially with an early stage startup, there's a lot of kind of wild and crazy titles, and very rarely do they really capture everything that somebody does. Once you get farther along in the growth stage of a company, and that's when you kind of start to nail down what you do. And, you know, for last year, yeah, I called myself a chief performance engineer, and that's going to change a little bit moving forward. But really, you know, I do a lot of things on a day-to-day basis, which I absolutely love. And it's being able to almost be this expert generalist, in the sense of being able to kind of dive in and out of all the different verticals that we have going on, be in multiple different conversations that are all over the place. I thrive in those situations. And when I look back on my career coaching in college and the NFL, and what I've been doing in the gaming space, it's just problem solving. Mm. You know, so that's where the engineering part came in. You know, and then performance has always been, that's always been my bread and butter. You know, and I think I said this on the interview that we did. You know, performance is my passion, right? But it's my curiosity that navigates me through the world. And that's been, it's served me very well. I'm an incredibly curious individual. I'm always asking questions, and I'm always looking for ways to optimize to get better. And part of that is both my own self introspection and ways I can improve myself, and then also how I can improve the work that I do. And a lot of that just comes with more open and candid conversations with, which I think is now becoming more of a cultural shift. I mean, it's interesting how some people aren't willing to have those tough conversations, but man, when you lean into that and you open up the conversation to really bring forward, you know, your gifts to the world and what you think and your perspective, but not have any ego associated with it, that's when real change and innovation happens.
Yeah. So it's taken me to get to 25 years old to really give a shit about that stuff. Like, you know, I mean, fine tuning myself, like, I've been putting out fires around me for a long time in my job. That's kind of how I see things, in a sense, as you say, like dealing with problems all the time. You know, it's just like, right, dealing with this, dealing with that, and then you're kind of secondary to that. What point did you come to this kind of realization that you love performance and the curiosity for how things can work better and how things actually work in general? Like, what point did that come about for you? Because I kind of feel like a late bloomer in that sense.
Yeah, great question. I mean, really, I've always been fascinated with performance. You know, since I was young, I was always playing multiple sports. I think it was really in high school when I was playing American football that I got really, really in tune with, like, okay, I realized that our football coach, who was also our, you know, a PE teacher and a history teacher,
right,
he was a great football coach, but he knew nothing about performance and optimization. So that's when I really started to dive in, start reading about ways to train myself, and then I ended up training other people on the team, and I was like, oh, you know, I actually really enjoy this. And then after high school, played at a community college football, and ended up leaving, you know, after 1 year, and leaving football after 1 year, American football, and really got really heavy into martial arts, and that's what really sparked my interest in optimizing performance. I think really from just the discipline that comes with it, and the spiritual aspect of it, of being very much in tune with your body and your mind. And I started out doing Krav Maga, which is like a Israeli self-defense, hand-to-hand combat. Heavy Muay Thai kickboxing, which ultimately led me to living overseas, and I trained, fought professionally over in Thailand. And that's where I start to really blow my mind open and be like, okay, I signed up for my first fight. Actually, my trainer signed me up for my first fight. You know, I was there 6 months, and I would have been there longer, but I'll get to that point. The signed up for the first fight, and I was like, okay, so I'm training hard as I can. Mm-hmm. And the person I'm going to be fighting is training hard, probably as hard as they can. When we step in that ring, the biggest difference is going to be our mindset. Well, and so I got super heavy into sports psychology. And that's where I really started to develop love, passion for understanding, reflection, and journaling, and understanding different tools and tactics on how to optimize my mind, because I knew that was totally in sync with my body. And did a lot of visualization, and you know, that was a phenomenal experience. And so I started to get the itch to really continue my education, because I had left community college to go do that. I was 20 years old, so I basically packed up all my stuff, finished my semester, moved to Thailand. you know, no plan. Wasn't planning on coming back, really. And then my dad flew out for my 21st birthday. I was like, hey, you should probably come back and finish school. And by that point, I was so enthralled with sports psychology. I'd be like, cool, I'm going to go back to the States, get my degree in sports psychology, go back to Thailand, and that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Right.
Obviously, that didn't happen. But that's really, again, kicked me off on this whole performance track. And so when I went back, you know, I was still training people on the physical side, taking classes for sports psychology, went to university at UC Davis. And then I took my first exercise physiology class and absolutely fell in love with it. And literally from that first class was like, oh, I could do this as a profession. Mm-hmm. Walked to the collegiate weight room, walked in there, introduced myself to the head strength coach and said, I'm your next intern. And he goes, well, we don't really have interns. I'm like, cool, now you do. And he was just like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Fair point.
And so if I wasn't in class, if I wasn't in the library, I was in the weight room training. And that was, I mean, I loved it, man. I that was my life through college and really enjoyed that whole process. And granted, I was a little bit older by the time I got to university. So my whole view on my education and my training and really honing in on my craft was a lot different. And then that led me down to working at some amazing universities, which ultimately led me to working in the NFL.
So basically you're saying I should just never get on your bad side or else I'm going to get a good hiding, right?
I mean, maybe, you know, no, I'm just kidding. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I knew you had like a fighting background, but I didn't know you'd like move to Asia to like properly go for it, you know? Like the only thing that reminds me of is Hot Shots Part 2 with Charlie Sheen. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I think of instantly. You know, he's like dipping his hands in the fudge and getting—I don't know. It's just crazy. But like,
yeah,
it's like the kind of underground scene there. You know, that's what I think of instantly.
Yeah, crazy story about that. So when I was in Thailand, you know, you would fight very frequently. I only had 3 fights, but I had friends that were there training consistently, and they would fight, you know, once, twice a month because that's how they make their income. And the Thai fighters, they fight every week. And the purses in Thailand are decent. You could definitely get by. But in Burma at the time, Burmese bare knuckle fighting was a huge thing, still is. And so I'd have friends that would go to Burma and have these bare knuckle fights and crazy, like absolutely crazy. I would never do that because those guys are out there. But, you know, that was just what I did, man. It would be trained 6 days a week, 6 hours a day. Sundays were our only day off, and I absolutely loved it. But yeah, and then when I came back, you know, I got really heavy into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I think for me, that is my sport. That is my passion. That's my love. And I got really heavy into that and trained and competed. And then ultimately messed myself up by playing rugby at university and got my first knee surgery and then ended up having 5 knee surgeries over the next couple of years. Yeah. So that really, and to kind of continue on the performance path, that really sparked my interest in rehabilitation. So before I was really heavily focused on performance, then I got really heavy focused on rehab, and sports psychology was the first thing. And then when I started doing the rehab, I'm like, well, nutrition is super important because if you don't have the right nutrition to set the nutrition biochemistry up for recovery, well, then what are you doing? So that's what kind of started, again, the curiosity kind of started to lead me into all these different facets around sleep and sports science and everything.
Okay.
And then being in the NFL was kind of like this pinnacle of being able to do all of those things because I had this phenomenal opportunity. You know, my mentor, my boss at the time, Mark Uyama, who's the head performance coach, he was like, all right, you got sports science, nutrition, the weight room's your bread and butter, and you're helping with rehab. And I was like, that was a hell yes. I'm like, yeah, let's go.
But have you, on a quick side note, have you ever spoken to Skylar Johnson?
I have not.
I feel like you get on him very well. I've had him on the podcast before. And
cool.
So he was massively into sports. And then I can't remember the nature of what he did, but he hurt himself. And while he was sorting himself out as such, like he turned to Call of Duty and that's how he ended up going pro there. And then he like co-founded Team Envy. And, you know, and like he's also spoken to me about players' hands, for example, like console players, like they are absolutely messed up. They're not doing the stretches beforehand. And then he went on about Clayster, who's playing for the Dallas Empire at the moment. His hands are like it's incredible. So I feel like it would be valuable for you two to speak to each other. There'd probably be quite a lot you could speak to. I will actually connect you after this if you're interested. We could discuss that more.
Yeah,
but yeah,
of course.
It's just with you saying about rehabilitation and such. It just reminded me of of that. Yeah, it's just like that, like traditional sports and an injury there actually led him to his whole thing now, and now he's very successful in esports. You know, it's interesting. So what I want to do is, like, you say your curiosity is what navigates you through everything. So do you find gaming and esports to be, or to pique your interest more than like the traditional sports side of things, or did that kind of develop over time, or is it not the case? Because obviously it's a newer sector, a newer phenomenon as such, and it seems relatively untapped. I can say that from an ignorant standpoint. I'm not in the trenches every day like you are, for example, but it seems like only the surface has been scratched in terms of optimizing performance and longevity and avoiding burnout and such within esports.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's become a huge passion of mine now too, but it is a very big curiosity. And that happened 3 years ago when I made the transition from the NFL into gaming and esports. And I started out just asking the same questions I would of any other traditional sport team. You know, how do you train? How do you practice? What's recovery like, if there is any? What's a travel schedule? And the overarching, what are the structure, systems, and schedules that are in place? Like, what is that scaffolding that allows players to play well? And really saw that there was a huge gap in the health and wellness component. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, well, why is that? And then finding out that the average career for a player at the time was like 2 to 4 years in their prime. I'm like, well, shoot, guys in the NFL, you know, they're grinding it out. Their careers are like 2 to 3 years in length, but there's a huge physical demand that's placed upon them.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting banged up left and right. And it's, I mean, there's definitely a lot of trauma, you know, little team trauma that goes on with what happens in traditional sports. I'm like, so what's happening on the gaming side? And for a lot of people, you know, what kept coming up in conversation was, you know, it's burnout. Well, it's cognitive burnout, right? So then what leads to cognitive burnout? What are the different factors and stress and how to build up resiliency so that players can not only improve their performance, but also improve their longevity? Because those are the two key things, right? Mm-hmm. Performance is one thing, but longevity is the other one. And that's the conversation I'm always having with players and organizations is like, look, yes, we want them to perform well, but we also want them to perform well for as long as we can and sustain that performance. It's more money for the players, more money for their families, and it's a better ROI for the teams and the organizations, because then they have that cohesion of a unit that they can then develop and curate and really push them forward to the next level. And that's where, you know, again, with where we're at right now in this time and, you know, kind of catching this wave of really seeing esports performance really come to fruition, it's super exciting. And like, you know, 2-3 years ago, I was like, look, we're too soon for it to really catch on. Mm. 2020 is going to be the year. And sure enough, I mean, I'm not a fortune teller, but man, it's happening in a major way, which is really exciting. I'm just very fortunate to be a part of that in some small way and start to have these conversations, continue to have these conversations on pushing the limits of what we think is possible.
Yeah. And I think it's more necessary now than ever before as well. As we see, like with Overwatch League and Call of Duty League, they're now, well, Overwatch League's just adopted the home and away function, and Call of Duty started with that, where they're traveling effectively every week to either a new state or even a new country, because there's Paris and London involved, and there's Asia involved. Obviously the coronavirus is kind of messing it up now, but that will be the case. And just yesterday, actually, Alex, so like a British CSGO player who was with Team Vitality, one of the top teams, actually retired from playing, because he said last year we traveled, I think it was 36 weeks out of the calendar, and it's just like, it's just too much. It's like, he's not prepared for that. They tried to negotiate a lesser schedule as such, where it'd be like 22 weeks, but with how competitive the ecosystem is for CSGO with ESL and Faceit and Blast all going gung-ho trying to make shit happen, it's a really demanding calendar, and it's just, it's not sustainable. So I feel like as travel's obviously a huge part of esports now, but especially with, as I say, like the franchise league from Activision Blizzard, I feel like the burnout's going to be bigger than ever before. And I think just last season, in season 2 of Overwatch League, there were like 5 or 6 retirements. And some of them say it's from not enjoying the game anymore. But I mean, that's been out, Overwatch has been out 3 years, and I think CSGO's been going 20 years, for example, and there's still CS players going. So I don't know if that's solely the entire reason. The burnout is leading them being sick of the game for now, and they'll probably rediscover it later as a streamer. You know, it's just, it feels like it's building up to a point where there's going to be a massive breakthrough and everyone's going to be adopting the performance models and such that, like, we see Astralis and Origin and on and such. You know, it feels like we're right on the cusp, and you're probably right with the 2020 prediction in terms of when people really start to take it serious and it's prioritized more, just as much as anything else is, as well. You've got your practice and then you've got your preparation and such, you know. I feel like, yeah, it's the right time for it.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's, the travel schedules are pretty wild, and there's ways to optimize that, and it's really just working backwards from when game day or when the matches are. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to happen more with organizations, and they're starting to be more methodical with their practice in terms of really periodizing their training, which has been something that we were always trying to push when, you know, when I was working with Infinite, with Optic and all those teams. It's a hard conversation to have because a lot of players and coaches are so ingrained in what they've always done.
Yeah.
But you need to ask the question, are you successful because of or in spite of everything you've done? And how important is your performance and longevity? And, you know, for some, now more so than others, they're way more receptive to being like, okay, yes, this is really important. I see the benefit. I understand the why behind it. And then you can start to open up the conversation to be like, okay, let's really think through how we manipulate different variables, right? These variables around volume, density, intensity, and frequency. It's the same sort of stuff that's being done in traditional sports. It just hasn't been brought over and molded to the context of gaming and esports. But I mean, it's all the same stuff. Performance is performance and recovery is recovery. And you also need to acknowledge that there are differences, and you just figure out those differences are, and then you start to curate and organically build what that model should look like for that organization, for that team, for those players. And you start to drill down, right? Because at the mm-hmm. center of it all, you know, when we talk about like long-term player and skill development, at the center of that is an adaptable human being, right? So they're going to adapt to whatever stresses you put on them. And at some point they'll adapt and then stop adapting, and then they'll fall off that cliff, and that's burnout. Right. So it's being smart and methodical on how you're setting up those training schedules and being really in tune with the players, and more specifically, having the players be more in tune with themselves and being able to openly share about where they're at that day and listening to the players. Yeah. And then from there, you could start to be more constructive in how you build out those practices and recovery.
Without a doubt. One thing I think that's actually helped the whole just esports in general is moving away from team houses, where it almost felt like a sweatshop for content and practice, you know. So like you see, like Optic Gaming, for example, when they had the original house and they moved like Merc and Nade and Scump and Big Timer over into, they're all playing in one room and they'd scrim, and then when they were done with that, they'd go on Twitch and they'd literally compete with each other so you could have the most viewership and such, and it drove like an unhealthy, It created a rift between like the team itself, you know, and you want the team to be, as you said, like a cohesive unit, and like being around each other, like just going into your own rooms at night and sleeping there at like 4 o'clock in the morning and waking up at 2 p.m. and doing it all over again. It's just like a really unhealthy cycle. It was kind of seen as like, oh, this is a great thing, especially for the team owners and such, because they're probably making bank and their brand awareness has never been better because they're just constantly on the go. But now we're seeing like Complexity, I think, is a really good example with the GameStop Performance Center. I can't speak to just how effective everything they've got there is, but obviously they've got the resources of the Dallas Cowboys, and they've got like sleeping pods and a mind lab, yep. I think it's called, and everything, you know. Just seeing that, and obviously their own apartments and such, so they've got their own time away from things and like a physical workplace where they can go and do all of their duties for the day. I think that's been a big advancement in esports. I don't know if you agree with that. I assume you would, but you're smarter than me. So.
I don't think so, man. I think that Complexity, I think very highly of Complexity and what Jason Lake and Kyle Batista and Cam are doing over there. They are really putting the player first. They're thinking very methodically on how to build out a performance-based team. Mm-hmm. And I love what they're doing. And I think they're really investing the time and the effort and the resources to really build out, you know, their program, their organization, to lead the pack of what's possible with performance. So it's awesome to see them do that. I'm super excited for them, and I've been in the facility. It's absolutely beautiful, and you know, they put a lot of thought into it as well. And I think a lot of teams are starting to put a lot of thought into how they're building the facilities, but not through the lens of performance and recovery.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if you get like a sponsorship or a partner with a gym, that's one thing. But to actually have the setup like Complexity, where literally right across the street is the Dallas Cowboys, where they can train at their facility.
Yeah.
They can go to their training table. They actually, their players actually call it training table, which is awesome, right? I mean, that's a key word from traditional sports. Like, yeah, we're going to training table. That's nutrition. You know, that's the nutrition aspect of it. They have partnerships with various with the hospital settings over there. So they're doing all the testing. They're doing all the precautionary tests and assessments for the players. I think it's fantastic. And I would imagine a lot more teams are going to send them to follow suit and be like, okay, well, what are they doing? Cool. What can we take from that and really start to implement what we got going on?
Yeah, because as you say, there are other facilities and such, like 100 Thieves obviously just unveiled the Cash Out compound. But and I did watch the tour video, and I can't recall ever seeing anything strictly to do with performance. There was a training area for the league team where it had its own stage, so it's like mimicking the setting being at the LCS studio, which is quite a cool concept, but I don't think there's anything actually there. And what we saw recently with Seattle Surge and Vancouver Titans, they partnered with, I think it's Adamus Esports. I could be wrong on that name, but I think that's what it is. But I can't tell how intensive that actually is, and it certainly doesn't seem like it will be as effective as what Complexity is built out. So yeah, I'm just hoping people play catch up. Dignitas, it's building something with Verizon, and as all these multi-million-dollar facilities popping up, and as you say, just I really hope like they use the GameStop Performance Center as kind of a blueprint, or at least something to build off of, like an example of, okay, we need to do something like that. And obviously results speak for themselves. So if Complexity perform really bad, there'll be a lot of naysayers saying, oh well, them putting all that effort in actually didn't do much. But I mean, they've got Oba, who's like a 16-year-old CSGO player. Like, he's going to benefit so much more from being raised and kind of trained in that environment over time. Yeah. I guarantee he's around for a lot longer if skill persists, you know, rather than, say, if I decided to try and become a pro now and somehow get lucky. Like, I've had many years of real bad practices. My posture's awful. I've not really looked after myself, you know, whereas he will be like literally bred and trained in this purpose-built area. So yeah, I hope that's a trend that carries on. I don't really care about like, oh, you've got the best architecture and all this kind of shit. It's like, right, how is this going to help you with your operations, both behind the scenes and in the server, you know?
Well, you touched on a really good point there. You know, this next generation of players coming up are going to be exposed to a whole new level of training, preparation, and execution. I think that's what's really exciting, is because we're kind of on the tipping point of esports performance, you know, being a common thing and being in conversation, having esports performance coaches and having performance directors build out facilities and build out resources and education. That is going to school up this next generation of individuals who want to be professional players, and they're not going to know anything different. You know, they're going to be like, okay, well, I want to be part of an organization that has good facility, good resources, a good schedule, a good training table. They're going to give me access to medical professionals. They're going to give me access for recovery tactics and tools. They're going to think about my travel schedule. They're going to help me optimize all aspects of my life so that I can be the most successful. And then again, you know, that is the biggest investment a team can make, is in their players in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really starting to happen. And it's really cool to see, you know, it's, you know, it's what we were trying to do initially at Infinite with Innovative Performance Institute. And I feel very good about what we were able to accomplish, but we were too early.
Yeah.
You know, we were, you know, 2 years too early, and that's okay. Cause I feel like a lot of what we started to do is now starting to pop up other places. And I know the players that I worked with, you know, I still talk with a number of them, and I feel like we had a really big impact on their lives, both personally and professionally. And that feels really good.
Well, that's awesome. And yeah, I spoke to Simon Bennett last week on the podcast, and we spoke about Infinite and how it was entirely ahead of its time, but that model will be utilized in future, not just on the performance side, especially on that side, but I mean all sorts with the partnerships arm and obviously all the merchandise and Gage and you know, it's just like the possibilities there were endless, and like that could be a real like money making machine, and obviously like be the gold standard of things in the entire industry. But yeah, as you say, it just kind of it came at the wrong time. But yeah, hopefully it will have a positive influence moving forward, and at least showed kind of how this infrastructure could be set up, and if it's applied correctly and with the right brands and such, I guess some of the right people in the right positions, then yep. that could be the way to thrive, you know. I've just not seen yep. anyone really pop up and try and do that yet, but it does require significant investment, obviously, and we've seen one instance of it, and ultimately it didn't work out. I wouldn't say like having all of these business units was the reason it didn't work out. But I understand why some people could be hesitant, as like the key players in like decision making roles as such. But what I'll do is I'll shift topic a bit to make sure we're discussing what you're doing more. So can you explain to the listeners and the watchers what State Space is and what it does, and kind of your role within that as the Don, the coach, the chief performance engineer?
Yeah, man, I'd love to. So State Space, so we're a neuroscience and AI gaming company. And really, like, the overall vision for all of it is peak performance without self-imposed limits.
Okay.
And so what we're going after with that is really to innovate in the space and the industry and provide tools and resources and a product, which is AimLab, that really allows people to go beyond anything they ever imagined possible for performance. And it's really exciting to be a part of. You know, our team is awesome. Like, we have the most eclectic and diverse skill sets and personalities and experience. It's, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure to be a part of it and to be a part of this company as it grows. And it's just really exciting, you know. And we're not just in gaming, we're also in healthcare. We submitted a grant for stroke rehab, okay. which is awesome. So we partnered with Mount Sinai, Johns Hopkins, and NYU. You know, our chief scientist and our CEO are both neuroscientists from NYU. And I'll talk a little bit about them just because they deserve some shine. You know, like, Wayne, our CEO, is absolutely brilliant. I don't think I've ever worked with somebody with that much aptitude for all things. And right. he's just an amazing human being. And has such a vision, like such a clear vision of what's possible. And he's built this amazing team to go build that, which is really awesome to be a part of. And David Heger, our chief scientist, is, you know, a very humble individual, but he's won damn near every award except the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
You know, he is just an incredibly intelligent human being and very personable and very, very, he's got just a phenomenal mindset, you know, and the way he views the world. I mean, everybody on the team brings their own unique perspective, which I think is so powerful for what we're doing. Because when you think about problems differently, you know, it's like you got Einstein right there. He says, you know, you can't solve the problem at the level at which it exists. You can't solve the same problem with the same sort of view, right? Mm-hmm. You have to solve the problem at the level at which it exists. And that's really drilling down and be like, okay, what exactly are we looking at here? What are the possible solutions? And that's what we're doing. You know, so AimLab is our product. It's free to play. You could download it on Steam. And, you know, that is it's almost like a personal coach, right? So it's giving you real-time feedback on how well you're playing. It's a first-person shooter training platform. It's giving you information on these three different domains. So you have perception, cognition, and motor skills. And so it's giving you, as you play these tasks, it's giving you feedback on how well you did. It's not, did you just hit a target, yes or no? It's how did you hit the target? Did you overshoot, undershoot? You know, so precision, accuracy, reaction time, and speed. And it's been an awesome project to be a part of. It's really excited for as we continue to evolve it. I mean, it's only 40% done,
right,
which blows my mind because it's already such a polished product. So it's really exciting to think about the potential moving forward.
And what would you say the ultimate goal is at the company? Have you got like one grandiose thing that's kind of leading all of your actions, that's kind of overarching and yeah, as I say, just kind of informing everything that you're doing, working towards one particular goal?
I think optimize human performance, you know, and that goes for gaming and for healthcare and other industries.
Not bad. Not bad at all, because mine, I'm trying to think about my purpose. I'm like, What am I really aiming for? I mean, it's one of those questions. I feel like the goalposts may change over time, just as as everything does, you know. But I'm just kind of like,
yeah.
I guess just educate people and spread the word, which isn't a bad cause by any means, as long as you're spreading the right shit, you know. But yeah, it's sometimes really hard. Well, for me, I can only speak to myself, but like to really pinpoint what you're doing. So the fact that you've got something you can work towards, and obviously it's a huge goal, and it seemingly at least optimization can always be optimized itself. Like you can always do more, you know, to make things better. But I mean that's also
or less.
Without a doubt. But it's a self-serving thing where it's just like a cycle and constant improvement, and that's kind of the name of the game in this, right?
Yeah, well, we could jam out on the purpose stuff real quick. So that's something I'm really passionate about. Mm-hmm.
I'm right there with you recently.
You know, I think a lot of what people get caught up on is having just one purpose.
Yeah.
And if you were to say that, and this is just my own view on that, you know, my biggest purpose is to really develop myself as best as I can so that I can actually share my gifts with the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So it starts with me. So it's getting right with me and making sure that my body, mind, and spirit is dialed in and I'm doing everything I can to show up as the best version of myself every single day.
Exactly.
And also to deeply reflect, right? And to have amazing relationships and to really think about, okay, well, you know, I'm focusing on myself and now what can I share with everybody else?
Yeah.
And so that's, and the thing too is that, you know, we shed our purposes. We have these different missions, or we can call it a purpose in life. You know, you may go have a strong purpose and desire to go out and, you know, for instance, do this podcast and share with as many people as possible. And then you might get to the point like, okay, well, there's got to be a bigger game to play.
Yeah.
And then you start to, you shed this thing and you shift up to the next big purpose. And I think a lot of people get hung up on just having one purpose.
Yeah.
I think that's the wrong attitude to have. I think it's a constant evolution. I mean, look, if back when I was coaching, my purpose was to be an NFL coach. Great. I got there. Then I was like, well, I want to play a bigger game. You know, and it's not so much like, what's next is not appreciating what you're doing and where you're at, but it's thinking like, okay, well, what's going to best serve me that lights me up and how can I have the biggest impact?
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, it's wrapping their mind around, okay, well, what is that? And I think it starts with being very in tune with yourself.
That makes sense. Like I've cut down on seeing friends quite a bit and I've actively avoided relationships with lasses and such, and I don't see family as much, and I kind of thought about it. I've just been thinking a lot, because why not, right? Just trying to work everything out, and I thought it's quite selfish to just work on myself, but then I realized like I'm being selfish to be selfless, because you want to present the best you for other people around you to put your best foot forward in every situation, you know. So it's all perspective as to how that works. Cause I imagine some people would listen to that when you're like, yeah, everything I'm doing, I'm doing everything for myself. And then hopefully that'll benefit the people around me, both work-wise and in my personal life and such. But like, yeah, it's, you're actually doing it with the view of being a better you for everyone else. So, and I mean, if everybody did that, then the world would be very fucking different if everybody had that view, you know, cause go on.
I was going to say, it's not doing everything for myself as me in the center of everything.
Yeah.
It's realizing that if I'm not in alignment with what really lights me up, well, then I'm not going to be of any service to anybody, because I'm showing up at 50%. I'm showing up at, you know, 75% when I should be showing up at 100%. Mm-hmm. And people can feel that. And when somebody's out of alignment and they're acting out of integrity with themselves, people feel that. You know, and so I think it's getting very clear on that. And that's why doing like the deep work and doing a lot of, you know, the introspection, that, okay, well, what really lights me up, and being very clear.
Yeah.
But then having conditions of satisfaction, you know, like make a list of your conditions of satisfaction for what you're doing in life and the relationships that you have. This is actually a pretty interesting thought experiment to do. It's, you know, if you have like your last four jobs, you write out like, first thought, you write out like, what's your ideal job? Like what type of relationships you want to have, communication, compensation, you know, scope of work, strategic and operational output, all of these things. And then you map out the previous four jobs, and then you basically put a check next to each one of those things if they have it, or you don't put anything if they don't. And then you turn that into a percentage. So you take, you know, the number of your conditions with how much each one ranked, and that turns into a percentage. And very often you find specific trends. It's kind of like this ebb and flow, and you'd hope that it's trending upward, that you're getting closer and closer to meeting these conditions of satisfaction. I think that's a very interesting experiment. You could do that with your relationships. It's, again, it's about getting more in tune with yourself and identifying the areas in which you really want to show up fully. Because in my opinion, the worst thing you could ever do is to not fully show up and have a stand for yourself and be intentional in your actions, because you're just not, not being able to fully serve in that way.
100%. I've actually been going through this a lot. I've been kind of transparent on Twitter. I kind of don't really care for social media too much, but like I'd say I was 75% there to quitting my job and leaving esports and trying to work something else out, you know. And the last 25% didn't materialize because I didn't know what was next. Like I took the role of editor at Esports Insider in July last year, and I mean I understood the responsibilities and such, and I understood what I needed to do, and I wouldn't say I shied away from it or didn't really work hard, but I don't think I fully appreciated exactly the opportunities that were there and how it actually aligned with what I wanted to do. I had kind of a cloudy vision of where I was and who I was and where I was going. And it took maybe 2 weeks of, I didn't have a practical exercise like you just described there. I wish I did. And I could have found it, no doubt, or spoken to you, which I should have done, definitely. But I was just kind of...
You can always reach out to me.
I know that. But I was just kind of in my own head, you know. Like, if I don't know what I want, how can someone help me? You know, and it's just, I don't know what it was, but after a lot of thinking, I woke up one morning, I think, so I took a Saturday, I meditated for 2 hours that day, I went for a long walk, and I just did a lot of mindful activities, you know, and I woke up the next morning, and like a switch had been flicked in my head, where it was like, oh shit, like, the opportunities that I've got right now, are actually perfect for me. There's all the challenges there. Like I don't need to be on like cruise control or autopilot at all. I can do absolutely everything I want to do day to day in this role. And it's just like, and I wouldn't say I took it for granted, but I just don't think I truly understood what was there, you know. And it took a period of reflection to work that out. And but when you're stuck in that mindset of not knowing where the hell you're going, it's just, I was useless to everyone else because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing myself. Yeah. You know, it's a really tricky one. But and it's,
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you said an interesting thing in there of, you know, not knowing what you want to do. You know, so if you think about knowledge, of like this big sphere, right? You have a small slice of that of, that's what you know. You have another small slice of, you know what you don't know, like, do you speak Spanish? Yes or no? You know that information.
Yeah.
Everything else is you don't know what you don't know. And so the power of doing those thought experiments or even being in conversation is this process of discovery.
Right.
You know, the best way to learn something is to actually discover it for yourself.
Yeah.
And so what it sounds like with the meditation and the walking and getting some mental clarity, you kind of discovered this new way of being. They're like, I can actually take action. I could be intentional. I could set boundaries. I could do these things.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes we're so much caught up in the act of doing, which really ways of being, which are very different.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, who are you being when you're taking action? Are you being confident? Are you being, you know, driven? Are you on purpose? Right. And again, this goes back to, and I love that you took time for yourself to do that, because I think more people, in my opinion, more people should make time each week to reflect and debrief their week and check in with themselves.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what we were, you know, I still have conversations with a lot of players, is like learning how to check in, you know, check in with yourself, like, how am I? Am I hungry? Am I tired? Am I lonely? Am I angry? Like, this is like invaluable information to know. It's for you to check in with yourself, because what you tend to find is, you know, a trigger may happen, you know, that'll set you off course, right? You may get tilted over something. If you hang on to that for a few days, that becomes your mood. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you hang on to that for a couple months, that becomes your temperament. And if you hang on to that for long enough, it becomes your personality.
Yeah.
And so it's being able to quickly identify and notice and name what comes up for you, whether it's tilt in a specific context of a game or some instance or stimulus in life, And then the differential between being able to notice and name it and then clear it, the shorter you can create that differential, the more successful you'll be in learning from those mistakes or failures. And there is no failure. There's only feedback. Mm-hmm. And that continues to drive you forward.
But yeah. Yeah. That fucking hell. Oh, I could talk about this stuff for hours, man. It's crazy. But I know you've got things to do. It's obviously it's later here than it is where you are. So I want to wrap things up. Hopefully we could do a part two at some point because there's plenty of shit we didn't talk. It's not shit. I've got a really bad habit of saying that. There's plenty of stuff we didn't discuss that I would have liked to, but I feel like we've gone down some interesting kind of paths. What I'd like to do, actually, something a bit different. Have you got a kind of a resource, whether it be a book or a video or a course or anything like that you think would provide value to people who find this whole element of optimization and performance and even self-development and mindfulness and stuff? Have you got anything you could recommend?
Yeah, I've got a ton of books. So what first comes to mind is Mastery by Robert Greene.
Okay.
Robert Greene, probably one of my favorite authors. He talks a lot about, in Mastery specifically, he talks about these three stages of your journey in like this apprenticeship to being a journeyman to mastery.
Yeah.
And loops in other successful people from multiple different times over the course of life. And it really how the trials and tribulations that they went through. I think that's a phenomenal book. The Five Effective Ways of Thinking, I believe the title is called. That's another really good book on just trying to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. Berger is the author on that. Last name's Berger. And those are the two that come to mind right now. And I could send you a whole list. I'm a huge reader. I probably have about four or five books on rotation that I kind of dive in and out of each week. I wish I had more. If I had 6 hours a day just to read, I would totally do that. Yeah. But I don't. So I try to get at least an hour, and I divvy it up throughout the day.
Yeah. I'm trying to work out a permanent kind of routine or a habit, which is apt because the book that I am starting tonight is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And I've heard amazing things about that. I don't know yet, so I can't recommend that as such, but it's another avenue to look down. Like his tweets at least like resonate with me and are very, very apt to where I am mentally right now and such, you know. So I just thought it'd be a good thing to kind of let people know where they could kind of go if they wanted to find out more of this kind of stuff, you know, because I mean hopefully people will find this interesting. Like realistically, if there's one thing I think people should find interesting, it is this whole journey of being better and working things out. And I don't know, it's just everyone seems to be lost, you know. Like when you're young, you think, oh, they're an adult, they've got everything figured out. And then you become an adult and it's like, oh shit, we're all just like big kids and just kind of working our way through it and putting out fires. And you know what I mean? It's just everyone's kind of just trying to work shit out, man. But yeah, you've got to go. I've got to go read a book and meditate and sleep and be my best self, be the best Adam Fitch, you know. So I just want to say thank you very much for coming on. Time to plug yourself. Where can people find you, your thoughts, what you do, everything like that? Go ahead. It's yours.
Yeah. So first off, I just want to acknowledge you for all the work that you're doing. I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
Of course.
It's awesome seeing you transform as well. And I feel very fortunate to be in conversation with you. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram at @CoachT_Johnson, LinkedIn, of course, Taylor Johnson Performance. I think you could just look that up and that'll find me. And then I've got a lot of really cool stuff on the horizon. I'm super stoked about 2020. It's going to be an awesome year, and it's all about having an impact and doing really cool shit and having fun while we do it.
Okay, so when you've got some of these things out in the open later in the year, we can do a part two if you wish, and we can go some more and find out what you've been working on, man. Because I myself on a personal level am excited, and as I say, there's plenty more that I would like to discuss with you at some point. So yeah, I will we'll leave it there for now. Thank you again for coming on, man. I appreciate it. You're a top bloke, you know that. I think that anyway. For everybody who's watched and listened, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm not really going to plug myself. You can subscribe or like or follow if you want to. If not, I understand, but I disagree with you. And I'll catch you next week if you do give a shit. All right, thank you again. Cheers.
Cheers.